Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hi, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart, and Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. My co-host, Brian Myers, is enjoying his grandkids on vacation up in South Dakota, so he won't be on the air with us today. But on the phone, we have a very special guest, Dr. Ben Carson, who is a former neurosurgeon. So he literally, you know, is smart enough to do brain surgery. And he's a Republican presidential candidate. Welcome, Dr. Carson, to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
So I have to ask you a question that I ask any candidate that comes on our program. Why in the world would you want to do this to yourself? Why are you running?
Well, wanting to do it probably is not the correct description. Being willing to do it, because I think our nation is in so much trouble. My whole career was spent looking after children and looking out for their welfare. And I realized that the direction that we're going, they're not going to have much, if any, of a future. And there are so many people clamoring for me to do this. I started listening, trying to figure out why they felt so strongly about it, and recognized that perhaps I should get into it.
Yeah, you had quite a draft movement to get you into the race. I was very impressed with the level of organization they had, as well as the fundraising that they were able to do. I'd never seen that for any draft organization before, so that was quite impressive. And you do have quite a ground game going for you in Iowa, do you not?
They're everywhere.
It seems that way.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So. I have to ask you, with the news today, with the Supreme Court, coming down with two very important decisions. Yesterday or Thursday was King v. Burwell on Obamacare, and then today they ruled in favor of same-sex marriage. Basically, there's a concern among conservatives. We have this runaway judicial branch. So a question I'll be asking candidates in the future is, what can be done about this runaway judicial branch? What would your criteria be for choosing judges? And what's your response to the ruling today on same-sex marriage?
Well, clearly we're going to have to be very, very careful going forward. The people will have to put in place a president who will carefully select Supreme Court nominees. They have to be people who understand the function of the Supreme Court, which is the interpretation rather than the changing and adjusting of materials and trying to determine what someone meant. What someone meant should be quite clear as they come into the court. It's not the judge's role to reinterpret them. But just to interpret them, not to reinterpret them according to their own ideology.
Right.
I think one has to be extraordinarily careful looking back through their history and doing due diligence before bringing someone up for such an appointment. Because if we get more progressive judges, we're going to lose our nation without question. I'm very disappointed with both of the Supreme Court rulings the last couple of days. The King versus Burwell, the reason I'm so opposed to the Affordable Care Act is because it fundamentally changes the relationship between the people and the government. Mm-hmm. The people are supposed to be at the pinnacle. The government is supposed to facilitate life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. But with Obamacare, the government comes along and dictates to the people what is going to happen, whether they like it or not. And if we continue to accept that, it will continue to accelerate. So, those are major problems, no question about it.
Definitely.
I do think, even though I strongly disagree with the decision today, we can't deny the fact that it has become the law of the land. doesn't mean that we can't fight it, and we need to look at all the possibilities that we have, because I think it's a bigger issue than most people recognize. If we can basically say that, you know, people's religious beliefs and the word of God means nothing on this issue, mm-hmm. then it's not far before we say it means nothing on any issue.
Right. It seems as though the Supreme Court have basically created a right for folks. The Constitution is silent on marriage. It was a decision that's always been left to the states. Are there any actions that could be taken, in your opinion, after this ruling, or is this just kind of a done deal?
Well, of course, Congress makes the laws. So they can make any law they want to countermand any previous law.
Right.
So, you know, they just need to be a little creative here. It can be done. And, you know, you need to recognize that, you know, the kind of liberties that have been taken by both the executive branch and the Supreme Court are being taken because Congress is being somewhat meek and mild. And, you know, they need to exert themselves, because the reason that we have divided government is so that we can keep these kinds of things from happening.
Back to your statement on Obamacare, you know, you being a doctor, you have probably unique insight compared to anybody else, you know, running right now. What changes should be made to Obamacare as far as, you know, getting rid of it totally? Is there anything in the current law that you think is good that should be kept? What would you replace it with?
Well, of course, you know, there are things, you know, pre-existing diseases, lifetime limits, things of that nature, that are good things. But what we need to do is to stop warring and making this into a big political issue. Healthcare is so important. It's the most valuable thing that a person has for their health. So what I would do is have a system that was based primarily on health savings accounts, making those available to everybody from birth till death. They could pass it on when they die. We can pay for it with the same dollars that we pay for traditional healthcare with. And we give people flexibility, the ability to move money around within their own family, between their accounts. Mm-hmm. It gives you enormous flexibility to cover almost anything. And then since almost everything's coming out of your HSAs, very little's coming out of your catastrophic health care, the cost of that goes down dramatically. Much easier to buy, sort of like a homeowner's policy that has a big deductible versus one with no deductible, two very different animals. And that will take care of the vast majority of people very effectively for less money than we're spending now, and it gives them total control. They can go and see anybody they want. They don't have a third party, and they're sucking up the money and telling them what to do. And then for the indigent, you take care of them with Medicaid the same way we do now. We spend $400 to $500 billion a year for Medicaid. We have about 80 million people participating. 80 million into 400 billion goes 5,000 times. Mm-hmm. So $5,000 for each one. What could you buy with that? You can buy a concierge practice. Most of those cost between $2,000 and $3,000, and still have thousands left over to buy catastrophic insurance, which is much cheaper now. I'm not suggesting we do that, but that's how much money there is that, mm-hmm. that is allocated already. And we can craft that into something that really works. And a lot of people in Washington, D.C. say, no, those people would be too stupid to manage, you know, such an account. But that's what they said about food stamps, and people learn how to use those. And they would learn how to use a health savings account as well. Mm-hmm. And so when Mr. Brown has a diabetic foot ulcer, he learns very quickly not to go to the emergency room, where it costs five times more than it costs to go to the clinic.
Right.
And the difference is, in the clinic, instead of just patching you up and sending you out like they do in the emergency room, they say, let's get your diabetes under control so you're not back here in 3 weeks with another problem. It's a whole other level of savings.
Yeah.
And also, you're teaching people to be responsible. And anything that we advocate should be teaching personal responsibility rather than dependency.
Okay. Sounds great. As far as other types of entitlement reform, how would you reform Social Security?
Because when Social Security was put in place, the average age of death was 63, and now we're approaching 80. Mm-hmm. There are a significant number of people in our society who don't need Social Security payments. They do just fine. I would give them the option of not receiving those payments, but receiving a credit for them instead, a tax credit. That would, about 20% of people would probably opt for that. Immediately stabilizes and puts Social Security back into a solvent position, and then allows us to start doing what we should have been doing all along, and that's gradually raising the age of retirement, starting with people who are 55 years old and under. I don't think we can do it for those who are approaching, you know, the retirement age already.
Sure. And as far as Medicaid and Medicare?
Medicaid and Medicare would be largely unnecessary with the program that I just outlined.
That's true.
Because when a person turns 65, you know, they continue to have their health savings account, and they can continue to use it. And I think it would be a much more efficient use of the way money is spent.
All right, kind of shifting gears here. You know, last week or no? Well, yeah. We had a shooting in Charleston, and President Obama weighed in and discussed. You know, he injected gun control into the debate, and of course we've had race relations injected debate and the whole Confederate flag issue. Injected into this appalling atrocity that happened. If you were elected president, what would be your approach to issues such as this, and how would you address? Because it seems like President Obama seems to have an opinion on a lot of different local events and state events. Would you have a similar approach, or you know?
No, I think I would use the bully pulpit to help people realize what we have in common, rather than what separates us.
Right.
What it's been used for the last several years is to create wars, you know, a war on women, race wars, anytime there's anything involving people of two different races, income wars, you know, always class warfare, religious wars now, age wars.
Right.
You know, these are exactly the kinds of things that you want to do when you want to destroy a society, not when you want to bring people together.
Right. So as far as the gun control debate, I know you have probably a differing opinion on the Second Amendment maybe than some of the other candidates.
Probably not.
No, okay. What is your position?
Well, my position is very strongly in favor of the Second Amendment. And if anybody reads my writings, they will see that. You know, when I first got into the political arena, you know, I said something about not wanting dangerous weapons to fall into the hands of crazy people, and where that was most likely to occur. And that was misinterpreted as meaning I thought people should not have the right to have semi-automatic weapons, or should not have the right to have weapons in a city.
Okay.
That's 180 degrees away from what I believe. But what I didn't know at that time, being a novice, is that you always have to state first, I strongly believe in the Second Amendment.
Right.
Right. I've learned that subsequently.
It's amazing how you sometimes, you being in a high-profile position, you kind of have to learn the hard way in front of media. But shifting gears, since we're getting close to being out of time here, we got about 4 minutes left, right, Ron? Let's look at foreign policy. First of all, how would you deal with Iraq? Iran.
Iran? Well, first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with negotiating, but you have to negotiate the right way. Unless they're willing to have our inspectors on the ground, any place they want to be, 24/7, and able to inspect any place they want to inspect 24/7, it's a non-starter. If they're not willing to do that, there's no negotiation to be had. It's as simple as that. And we would need to apply the sanctions, the strongest sanctions possible, not only against them, but against anybody else who broke the sanctions.
And as far as how do you view the United States' role in fighting ISIS?
I think we need to recognize that not only ISIS, but a whole host of radical Islamic jihadists wish to destroy us. This is a very different situation than what was going on in 2003 when we invaded Iraq, when there was questionable interest by our country. Now there's great interest because those entities want to destroy us in our way of life, and we need to use every resource available to us to destroy them first. It's as simple as that. They destroy us or we destroy them.
Great. 2 minutes left. I want to ask you about immigration reform. Where do you land there?
Well, I think we need to have a fair program. Is there an illegal immigrant problem? Of course there is. And we need to seal all of our borders, not just the southern borders, because it's not just the people, you know, coming from south of the border. It's also terrorists who want to get in here. So it's critical to us. And we have the ability to do it, just not the will. And then you have to turn off all the goodies, you know, turn off the things that are attracting them here. If they're not available to them, then they won't be coming. And that'll stop the influx, but you still have 11 million people here. What are you going to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of them don't know any other place and have never been in any other place. What you have to do, I think, is provide them with the ability to become guest workers.
Okay.
That way they don't have to hide in the shadows. They can still work. They don't become citizens. They don't have voting rights, but at least they don't have to hide in the shadows. And the farming industry doesn't collapse also. I was talking to a 8,000-acre farmer the other day, and he said he can't get any Americans to the crops, even though he starts them at $11 an hour. So, you know, obviously you can't just let the farming industry go to pot, so to speak. The other thing is if they want to become American citizens, they have to get in the back of the line, go through the process like everybody else, because we must be respectful of those people who have done it the right way, and we can't jump people in front of them. And then lastly, you know, we spend a lot of money on foreign aid to different places, including places in Central and South America. We don't have money to do that, so I would stop that immediately. And instead, I would encourage companies, corporations to go over there and help them to develop.
Thank you, Dr. Carson. Country. We're out of time.
Okay. My pleasure.
Hey.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. Appreciate it.
You and your spouse are like two chemicals that become combustible when mixed. Your actions and reactions just tend to set each other off. I'm Scott Olin with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Early in your marriage, the differences brought fireworks that brought spark and energy to your lives. But the addition of busyness and bitterness have created a concoction that simply explodes and rocks the foundation of your marriage. Understanding how you and your spouse respond when threatened can bring stability to your volatile mixture. One tendency is to become aggressive and to push for solution. We call them attackers. The other is to run from potential conflict. We call them escapers. Two attackers have quick combustion, but the smoke clears quickly. But if you have an attacker and an escaper, the explosion takes longer, but the fallout can be more devastating. For healthy chemistry with your spouse, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for caffeinated thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold, a Modern Woodman of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance you need. And I have a special guest in studio, and now that we're down in Des Moines, I have the opportunity to have more studio guests. I have Tom Hudson. He's the general manager of Crossroads Shooting Sports. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Tom.
Thanks, Shane. Glad to be here.
So you, let's see, you're into like, I want to say 180 days?
Right around there.
Right around there of having an indoor shooting range and pro shop, and it's a training center. Why did you decide to start something like that?
Well, at 180 days, I'm kind of wondering the same thing. it's been a great beginning. It started a couple years ago when I was heading home from church on a blustery April day, and my wife wanted to go shoot, and she didn't want to shoot outside, and the question just came up, well, isn't there someplace inside in Des Moines? And not being from Des Moines originally, we were unsure, and so started digging into it, peeling back the onion, and couple years later, we got the doors open finally.
Right, and so you are the only indoor shooting range, right?
At this point,
to a police academy.
Exactly. Right now, at this point, we're the only indoor shooting range and opportunity to do that inside in the Des Moines metro area.
So, wow. So, yeah. What are some of the classes that you guys – I mean, that's one of the things that struck me is, I mean, you offer all sorts of different classes.
Yeah, that was a huge part of what we wanted to do is not just provide somebody a place to go shoot. That's fun, but really to enhance your skills and develop your acumen around firearms. We have a kind of a core philosophy of wanting to serve personal protection, home defense, and concealed carry type thing. So classes like that. So introduction, basic handguns, that's kind of a fundamental that'll always be there. But we've got other classes that range from getting your Iowa permit to carry a firearm, satisfying the Iowa code there.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things.
That would be just a safety class that's required to take, right?
The Iowa code's a little doesn't really say what the class needs to be. Just go get some firearms training and then bring it your local sheriff's certificate to get your permit.
Okay.
So we have our classes a little bit more defensively themed. The idea is that if you're going to go get your permit to carry, and we may be turning somebody out that will get their license to now be able to carry a firearm concealed in public, we have a few skills that we'd like for them to know.
Sure.
So our curriculum's a little bit more, probably a little more in depth than what you can find currently out there on the street.
Okay.
But we got a lot of different things. We've got an 8-hour, like for example, this Saturday, tomorrow, we've got an 8-hour personal protection inside the home. How to make yourself defensible in your home. It's an 8-hour class, 4 hours in the classroom, 4 hours on the range.
Okay.
Actually, 4 hours of range shooting time. It's an in-depth, kind of an advanced intermediate level class.
So I remember when I first met you and you gave me a tour of the facility, you talked about how you were tailoring some of your classes and even some of the pro shop toward, you know, women.
Absolutely. So having a wife and two daughters, two young adult daughters, there is a lot of equipment that is available to females, but only through independent retail. Well, you look at the Des Moines retail environment for firearms, the independent retail opportunity is pretty slim. So bottom line is there's products out there that females, women don't have the opportunity to get their hands on, see, touch, and try. And so that was a core opportunity for us is to provide those products and those brands in the store.
Great. And you also have some classes that are geared towards women as well, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, exactly. Some ladies-only programs, whether we've got a couple of activities that are actually kind of a social thing, come in, spend some time with gals, and it's a class for gals, and then also just ladies only programming and a variety of other things.
So, yeah. So, say I get my permit to carry, and I want to, you know, I'm going to go in and buy a handgun. What would be some advice that you would give me?
Well, you know, interestingly, if you talk to someone that owns more than one gun, they typically say that the gun they like the least is the first one they bought.
Okay.
Because they didn't have a chance to shoot it or really do much about it. And, you know, you have to buy it. And once you buy it, you generally don't take a gun back. What makes us a little different is that we actually have a rental counter with a demo line of about 40 different models. And so while we don't have every single model exactly that's out there to buy, we have something representative of what you might be looking for. So you have a chance to actually shoot a gun in advance of ever buying a gun and knowing that the gun's a good fit.
Okay. And just you personally, what are some things you look for when you purchase a handgun?
Well, the purpose. Why am I buying that gun? What's the purpose of me having it? Do I have a specific use in mind? That's kind of a fundamental thing. After a while, you just kind of want another one.
Right.
But you know, first and foremost, what are you going to do with that gun? Why do you want it? Why are you going to have it? And then from there, you kind of develop the path of where you can help somebody. You're carrying a gun in a vehicle or on your personal carry out in public is very different, for example, than having a firearm for home for home safety. So, you know, there's a couple of different paths you can kind of start down from that perspective.
Yeah, I noticed you had some shotguns that you have there too that would be good for home protection. Obviously, you can't you could carry it, but I would not recommend it. You carry that around. You had different caliber weapons. I noticed you had a Desert Eagle 50 cal, which that'd be great for, you know, for a woman, you know, small lady carrying a purse.
Absolutely.
Think that'd be an awesome weapon for that. I looked at that. I'm just wondering, you know, I can't even imagine the kick on that. I've fired a few handguns. Usually, I tend to be more accurate, you know, with anything 38 or lower 45, it still's got enough of kick. I don't have enough experience where I can really be accurate with it. But so that's obviously caliber weapon, something that people look at. And I guess I'm trying to think of a question.
Let's go to the shotgun thing for a second, if you don't mind. So, for example, you won't walk in our shop and find any turkey guns, any pheasant guns, anything like that. We're a home defense. So all of our shotguns are 18.5 inch or 18 and a half inch home defense guns.
Okay.
A lot of them with pistol grips, things that you can swing easily through the door of a home, door frames of a home. So no 24 inch Benelli duck guns out there.
I have a shotgun at home I inherited from my father-in-law, and I was like, I couldn't even imagine trying to bring that thing up fast enough.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just too long of a barrel.
Yeah, exactly. So those kinds of things. And we have a lot of 20-gauge home defense shotguns. For example, to have a shotgun in the home, a 20-gauge with a short barrel is a fantastic option to protect yourself. First and foremost, you probably only need to cycle around in the chamber because it's a pretty distinctive sound.
Right.
Most bad guys are going to run when they hear that ching-ching-ching because they kind of know what's coming down the other side of that thing.
I don't want any part of that business.
Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned the Desert Eagle 50 cal. You know, that's a fun handgun, and really, it's really more of a novelty more than anything. We'll let people rent that. We have two setups where you can take 7 rounds and just take a magazine out, or you can buy a whole box. We have very few people buy a whole box.
Let's see if you could even hit the target with it first.
Well, interestingly, it's a surprisingly smooth shoot.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, but when the gun weighs 7.5 pounds, it does a lot of the job for you. You just got to get it up there in the air.
Right. Yeah. So, as far as somebody, what in Iowa, just a lot of our listeners probably don't realize what the process now is in Iowa. Iowa used to be... I think I'm trying to remember when they changed the law. It was like 3-4 years ago, and we used to be a may issue state. Now we are a shall issue state.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process somebody has to go to get a permit?
You know, they need to be eligible to make the application first and foremost. So there's some citizenship things and stuff like that. But really, what the law requires is that an individual produce a training certificate from an NRA or other state qualified firearms instructor.
Okay.
And it doesn't say what that training program should be. Just simply go get training from somebody that's NRA or state qualified affiliated. So there's a variety of things out there. But once they sit through that class, whatever that class is, up to the individual that offers it, then they simply take that certificate back to the county sheriff. Now you can actually apply online anymore. So for example, just this week, Dallas County, Sheriff Chad Leonard out there, his office, announced that they are online. So if you're a Dallas County resident, you can make application online, pay the fee, and actually get a text alert that your permit to carry is ready to be picked up.
Hmm.
And so it's an online process. I know in Polk County, Dallas County, every county is different. One of the nice features of 99 counties in Iowa is that we have 99 variations of the permit process.
Right. But at least now it's not as subjective as it used to be.
Absolutely.
It used to be. I know there were in Eastern Iowa a few sheriffs that pretty much denied everybody.
Yep.
And now there's strict criteria in the law that gives them the only basis on being able to deny somebody. So That's good, and that certainly has increased our freedom. And something I've noticed that your store, or at least you guys have been hosting, you've had a couple presidential candidates come through.
We have. Yeah, we have. It's been interesting. That's been fun. You know, one of the unique opportunities being where we're at right off the interstate at Merle Hay there in Johnston, we're pretty convenient. So, yeah, we're open to allowing, especially during this political process. Obviously, the Second Amendment is important. There's a lot of very, very important issues out there. But it's been neat. We've had Governor Huckabee there and Senator Cruz and Representative Ralph Watts from Dallas County. And we're working on trying to put a few more in through the door to book a few more. We're interested in letting people have firsthand opportunity to get firsthand information so they can make their choice. That's the beauty and freedom of this country,
right?
Is choice and freedom. And we want to be a platform and a conduit to offer them to have to receive the information, to create knowledge for choice and decision.
Great. And if somebody were to go to your website, crossroadshooting.com, and I wonder who did that website.
That's a fantastic
really nice
website.
You're right. Hint. You have a little ichthus at the bottom. You guys are a faith-based store. What does that mean for you?
You know, absolutely. We have been blessed throughout this entire thing. God has been in this all the way through. I'm a firm believer that. I have very fundamental faith-based believing partners that are involved with me financially. Crossroads Shooting Sports offers many different things. You look at this at the brand, and you can see a cross in that. You know that we make no bones about it, that we try to do the best we can to live for the Lord on a daily basis there, and through that we can outflow through the community the best we can for that organization and opportunity.
Great. So crossroadsshooting.com. We got a little bit of time left, so just want to pick your brain. What else can Iowa do to be more Second Amendment friendly?
You know, I just sat down and had a great conversation yesterday with a representative from a national gun organization, and we're going to be working on some things to be able to create awareness of people around the issues. There's a variety of issues out there, whether they be financially driven, trade driven, things on the international scene that are affecting our ability and chipping and eroding away at the Second Amendment. And so there's a lot of things people need to become aware of besides just background checks or whatever the latest blowtorch might be.
Well, in the legislature, they had a suppressor law that I'm trying to remember if that actually passed the Senate.
No, unfortunately it didn't.
I thought maybe that'd have a good chance. But there seems to be a misnomer about what a suppressor actually does.
Yeah.
They think it's like, you know, what you see in the movies, a silencer that you can't hardly hear. You know,
yeah.
And why is it important we have access to suppressors if we want one?
Well, for lots of reasons. It suppresses the muzzle flash and the noise capacity of that firearm. It doesn't eliminate it. It's not a silencer. There's no ability to have a silent weapon. It doesn't exist. But it simply makes the firearm safer to shoot, smoother to shoot, and ultimately, from a hearing conservation,
right,
institutional industrial hygiene type of – there are a lot of ways you can look at that on preservation of your hearing and that kind of thing, being able to fire that weapon in a safer manner.
Great. So, again, check out crossroadshooting.com. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and in studio we have Tom Hudson, who's the general manager of Crossroads Shooting Sports.
You know, I'd love to just say, if I can,
sure.
Shane, we're a 17-lane, indoor, state-of-the-art, climate-controlled facility. It's a 20,000-square-foot facility. You may have flown up and down Johnston Drive a dozen times before, cutting between Merle Hay and Beaver, and never really noticed these buildings. But you're going to walk in, and you're going to find a state-of-the-art, commercially designed and decorated by a female who was not a shooter. It's very different inside that place when you walk in.
Definitely. Not. I've been in several gun shops, and that's not usually what I think of when I walked in there. It's like, wow.
Yeah, leather seating in the lounge, coffee's always on, big screen TV with educational videos.
Uh-huh.
We really want to meet you where you're at and help you get where you want to be.
Great. So, yeah. And what are some of your future plans? Do you foresee growing this anymore, or
absolutely
opening up another store down the road?
You know, everything's on the table. We are at where we are today by what we did in the past, and I got to always be looking ahead and looking to the future, and plans are big at Crossroads.
Great. Again, that's crossroadshooting.com, and this is Tom Hudson and with Shane Vanner at Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and I encourage you guys to check them out. Even just go in and just look. If this is something that's new to you and you want to learn more, this is a great place to kind of get your feet wet. You can rent a weapon. You can try it out and just educate yourself. And I thank you, Tom, for starting this. This is a great thing, and I'm looking forward to doing more with you guys in the future. So
great. Thanks, Shane. Happy to have been here.
Great. Bye.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for caffeinated thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
You and your spouse are like two chemicals that become combustible when mixed. Your actions and reactions just tend to set each other off. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Early in your marriage, the differences brought fireworks that brought spark and energy to your lives. But the addition of busyness and bitterness have created a concoction that simply explodes and rocks the foundation of your marriage. Understanding how you and your spouse respond when threatened can bring stability to your volatile mixture. One tendency is to become aggressive and to push for solution. We call them attackers. The other is to run from potential conflict. We call them escapers. Two attackers have quick combustion, but the smoke clears quickly. But if you have an attacker and an escaper, the explosion takes longer, but the fallout can be more devastating. For healthy chemistry with your spouse, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. And this is usually our news breakdown, but I really kind of wanted to drill down today on the news from the Supreme Court. Obviously, two major decisions came down, like I discussed with Dr. Carson in the first segment. We had King v. Burwell. I always want to get that mixed up as King v. Burwell. On Thursday, that the Supreme Court decided, hey, yes, we're going to fix the law so it works, and we're going to support Obamacare. I want to talk more about that probably last segment. Now I want to talk about the decision that came down Friday on the same-sex marriage. This is the Obergefell v. Hodges ruling. It was 5-4, as a lot of these rulings tend to be anymore, except for King v. Burwell, which was 6-3. It was just very disappointing. Basically, right before the ruling, 35 states, either by a state court decision or by a state legislative decision, there's only a handful of states that actually have done this the appropriate way. But we have 35 states that basically were issuing same-sex marriage licenses, or excuse me, I should say just marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Now there's the remaining 15 states, yes,
will be told to the Supreme Court saying, you now have to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Ron, we're going to bring Ron in the conversation here. You never really get to hear the voice of Ron at Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, but we got a mic free now since Brian's not here. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Ron.
Hey, it's nice to be here, Shane.
You've heard his voice. So, Ron, this was just disappointing because, I'm going to be interested to see what kind of response we get from governors and legislatures in these states that currently weren't having to issue these licenses. Sure. Now, in Iowa, obviously, we're not going to see any change at all, other than maybe fewer people will come here to get married. That's probably going to be the biggest. That's probably going to be the biggest change we've seen since Iowa's been issuing marriage licenses for same-sex couples since 2009 because of the Iowa Supreme Court ruling. But this majority ruling, Justice Kennedy wrote the majority opinion. I just want to read some things that he said in his decision or in the opinion of the majority. He said the ancient origins of marriage confirm its centrality, but it has not stood in isolation from developments in law and society. The history of marriage is one of both continuity and change. That institution, even as confined to opposite sex relations, has evolved over time. And I read that and I'm like, first of all, a statement, the history of marriage is one of continuity and change. And he's talking about how marriage could evolve. Mm-hmm. So, he's been very clear where he says two people. But really, some of the arguments he has made and the way this opinion has been written, there's no real legal basis to stop polygamy.
Yep.
I don't see how they stop it if that comes to, and it will show up in court. Then he also said, the right to marry is fundamental as a matter of history and tradition, but rights come not from ancient sources alone. They rise, too, from a better informed understanding of how constitutional imperatives define a liberty that remains urgent in our own era. That is freaking scary.
Yeah, very much so.
Because our listeners should know where do our rights come from?
Mm-hmm.
It comes from God. It does not come from the Supreme Court. It does not come from government. We don't get to choose. We are given inalienable rights. We don't get to create them. And constitutionally, there's no constitutional basis to a right to marry. And frankly, the federal government really has no role in deciding marriage. And this ruling doesn't surprise me because of the DOMA ruling, but they alluded to the 10th Amendment in that ruling.
Mm-hmm.
But their failure to rule on the California case when they said, well, the parties didn't have standing to come before the Supreme Court and they just, dismissed it.
Mm-hmm.
They could have weighed in on this. That would have based on the ruling on DOMA, that could have possibly stopped this, at least kept at the state level. But now suddenly I guess their thinking has evolved. And then he finally he wrote, well, actually I'm gonna he had some a statement in there affirming religious liberty, but frankly, if you're calling something a constitutional right, folks, it's going to be hard for us to keep this from knocking down our front door down the road. And we're already seeing it with some businesses. But I eventually people are going to come after the church. Chief Justice John Roberts, in his dissent, actually it's an unusual press. This doesn't happen very often, but each dissenting judge wrote their own opinion. I thought that was interesting. But Roberts said in his dissent, but this court is not a legislature. I wish he kept that in mind with King
Indeed.
V. Burwell.
Indeed.
I don't know if he noticed the irony, but I do. Whether same-sex marriage is a good idea should be of no concern to us. Under the Constitution, judges have power to say what the law is, not what it should be. The people who ratified the Constitution authorized courts to exercise neither force nor will, but merely judgment. And then he continues later on in this dissent. Today, however, the court takes an extraordinary step of ordering every state to license and recognize same-sex marriage. Many people rejoice at this decision, and I begrudge none their celebration. But for those who believe in a government of laws, not of men, the majority's approach is deeply disheartening. Supporters of same-sex marriage have achieved considerable success persuading their fellow citizens through the democratic process to adopt their view. That ends today. He's saying five lawyers have closed the debate.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then Justice Antonin Scalia, who's my hero, because he wrote the King v. Burwell dissent was brilliant, too. But he had a good one, too. He says, today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans coast to coast is a majority of the nine lawyers on the Supreme Court. The opinion in these cases is the furthest extension, in fact, and the furthest extension one can imagine of a court's claim power to create liberties that the Constitution and its amendments neglect to mention. This practice is constitutional revision by an unelected committee of nine, always accompanied, as it is today, by an extravagant piece of praise of liberty, robs the people of the most important liberty they asserted in the Declaration of Independence, and won in the Revolution of 1776, the freedom to govern themselves. That's just brilliant.
It's
and
remarkable.
It is so right on.
Yeah.
And Clarence Thomas said the court's decision is today's at odds not only with the Constitution, but the principles upon which our nation was built. And he basically attacked this use of the due process clause. He says, by straying from the text of the Constitution, substantive due process exalts judges at the expense of the people from whom they derive their authority. I encourage you, our listeners, if you have not read these dissents, you need to some excellent cases. I wish common sense reigned throughout the entire court. And I want to, in our next segment, I want to talk about Scalia's some of what he wrote on with the the King v. Burwell decision. That was absolutely brilliant, because that as disturbing as this ruling was today on same-sex marriage on Friday. I guess we're recording Friday.
Yeah.
Thursday's decision was even more disturbing, because basically the court said, well, we're going to fix the law.
Yeah.
Wow. They can't do that.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Well, more to say. Check out CaffeinateThoughts.com. I haven't had a chance to write on it yet, but by the time you hear this program, I should have a piece up. So CaffeinateThoughts.com, and we'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
You and your spouse are like two chemicals that become combustible when mixed. Your actions and reactions just tend to set each other off. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Early in your marriage, the differences brought fireworks that brought spark and energy to your lives. But the addition of busyness and bitterness have created a concoction that simply explodes and rocks the foundation of your marriage. Understanding how you and your spouse respond when threatened can bring stability to your volatile mixture. One tendency is to become aggressive and to push for solution. We call them attackers. The other is to run from potential conflict. We call them escapers. Two attackers have quick combustion, but the smoke clears quickly. But if you have an attacker and an escaper, the explosion takes longer, but the fallout can be more devastating. For healthy chemistry with your spouse, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. ultimately was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, my friends. This is Shane Vanderhart, and in the studio with me is Mr. Ron Carlson, who you generally don't, he doesn't have a mic by his face, but now he does, and he can jump in here. Brian is on vacation, so we'll be back next week. Generally, in the last segment, if you listen to our show for any length of time, you'll know that this is when we talk about things you just can't make this stuff up.
Oh, and yes.
And you know what? We're still talking about that today, because as you, we're going to about to share a story with you that is truly unbelievable, as Brian would say. Yet you know it must be true because
you can't make this stuff up.
The King v. Burwell decision, 6-3. This ruling by the Supreme Court is so unbelievable. It should just be fiction. It's amazing that any court with common sense and any court that would actually exercise logic would come to this kind of conclusion. They literally reinvented what words mean.
Indeed they did.
And I could go on and talk, but I want to let Justice Antonin Scalia, I'm going to read some of what he had to say in his dissent opinion. It was masterful. It was almost mocking, but rightfully so, because he was just saying, this ruling is so asinine. It's hard to, you know, even comprehend. He said, this case requires us to decide whether someone who buys insurance on exchange established by the secretary gets tax credits. You would think the answer would be obvious. So obvious to be there would hardly be a need for the Supreme Court to hear the case about it. In order to receive any money under 36B of the Affordable Care Act, an individual must enroll in an insurance plan through an exchange established by the state. The Secretary of Health and Human Services is not a state, so an exchange established by the secretary is not exchange established by the state, which
Indeed.
Means people who buy health insurance through such an exchange get no money under 36B. Period. End of story.
Makes sense to me.
Right. So he's saying words no longer have meaning if an exchange that is not established by a state is established by the state. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Cuckoo.
Yeah, very cuckoo. He said also, the court's decision reflects a philosophy that judges should endure whatever interpretive distortions it takes in order to correct a supposed flaw in a statutory machinery. That philosophy ignores the American people's decision to give Congress all legislative powers enumerated in the Constitution. They made Congress, not this court, responsible for both making laws and mending them. The court holds only the judicial power, the power to pronounce the law as Congress has enacted it. We lack the prerogative to repair laws that do not work out in practice.
Mm.
Hello? Yeah. Mm. So basically, you know, he's saying also another quote. He said, this court's two decisions on the act will surely be remembered through the years. The somersaults of statutory interpretation as they perform, penalty means tax. Further, Medicaid payments to the state mean only incremental Medicaid payments to the state. Established by the state means not established by the state. Will be cited by litigants endlessly to the confusion of honest jurisprudence.
Yeah, he's
like, basically, we can call this law SCOTUS care. Now, he said that. It's like, so that's, it's not just Obamacare. Supreme Court owns it because they amended it. And if you understand your Constitution, the judicial branch cannot mend laws. Yep. It can only interpret laws. So this is a horrible precedence. Basically, he says this will discourage truth. The discouraging truth is the Supreme Court of the United States favors some laws over others and is prepared to do whatever it takes to uphold and assist its favorites. Mm. That should scare anybody, liberal or conservative, because now we have a runaway court. And this, if you didn't believe the judicial branch was out of control, we know it now. I'm just, music's not playing yet, so I'm not sure how much time we have, but I want to make sure we get this quote in by Thomas Jefferson that highlights this perfectly. To consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions, very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. That if he wasn't talking about today, I don't know what he's talking about. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Bye, folks.